Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
6:15, it's raining outside now, and is going to be raining all the way until maybe noon, 1 o'clock, something like that. The heaviest expected around 7 o'clock. Highs today of 62, but nowhere near as cold as it has been in the 40s, but it's going to come back tomorrow and Sunday. Highs tomorrow, 50, Sunday, 58. Chance for showers again on Sunday and Monday, I guess in advance of another front. That's going to put us in the 50s for most of next week. Jeff Palermo joins us right now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I am doing great. And I wanted to start with you by talking about the LSU bowl game because I recorded it. I was traveling. I didn't watch it. Tell me how they did against Baylor.
Well, it was a game where the offense looked really good, and it was a bit of a coming out party. Well, I wouldn't say a coming out party. It was a big game for Chris Hilton and Trey Des Green. I think those were the two guys that you came away most impressed with from LSU offensively. You knew Garrett Nussmeier was a good quarterback, and he looked really sharp in that game. But Trey Des Green, he was the only tight end on the roster because Mason Taylor is already preparing for the NFL draft, and Kamorian Pimpton, who was the third-string tight end, has entered the transfer portal, and he's at another school at this point. So he was the only guy, and you know Trey Des is 6'7", but he's not the thickest guy. But he went out there and made some big catches for, especially in the first half, and then Chris Hilton. Kind of like what we saw in the Oklahoma game, his ability to stretch the field, catch the deep passes, just gave the LSU offense another dimension. The Tigers got off to a really fast start, got up 14-0, and that really helped because the two teams really traded touchdowns back and forth the rest of the way. And I don't know how much you can really take from the defense. Whit Weeks gets injured early on. Mm-hmm. Looks like he'll be okay, though. We'll see if he's ready for spring football after dislocating his ankle. But, you know, they did a lot of their work as far as addressing the defense and the transfer portal, and those guys aren't ready to play yet, so or not able to play yet. So defensively, they just kind of went out there, did what they could, and they ended up coming away with the victory and a little bit of momentum heading into the offseason.
Tell me about the transfer portal quickly. Is it closed, then it opens again? Or I don't know how this works. Does anybody
know? For those on at Penn State, they now have 5 days to enter the transfer portal because they lost last night in the semifinal game to Notre Dame. So those guys are open. I mean, LSU is still having kids visit them, but they have done most of their heavy lifting at this point when it comes to the transfer portal. I mean, they got 14 guys out of the transfer portal. It's considered one of the best hauls in all of college football. You know, there's one guy that LSU is still one position I would say that the Tigers really didn't address in the transfer portal, and that's safety. And one of the top safeties that is still out there, North Carolina State safety, Tamarcus Cooley, he's been in Baton Rouge this week. So that might be another name that gets added to this transfer portal haul that Coach Brian Kelly has conducted here.
You got to, and we're going to get back to LSU basketball after the break, but I got to just talk about the college football playoffs a little bit. Having been to the Sugar Bowl last week and watching the game last night and a feature on ESPN, special teams coming up big for Notre Dame, and that really is a kind of special story in all of this. What with the coach's dad being a Notre Dame alum, the special teams coaches and he played at Marshall. But is now the coach at Notre Dame wearing his dad's jacket from when his dad went to Notre Dame. Looks like something out of Rudy. Notre Dame had that last-minute shift, right, that caused the penalty that extended the drive and maybe won the game for Notre Dame last night. They win it with a field goal. How far do you think Notre Dame can go?
Well, they're in the championship game now, and they'll play the winner of tonight's game.
Yeah, I should have phrased that differently. I should have said, can they win?
But it's pretty impressive what Marcus Freeman has done. And this is a team that's really been, you know, they lost two starters on the offensive line during yesterday's game. And they played really well in the second half because they couldn't do anything in the first half. They actually lost their Riley Leonard, went down with an injury. They bring in the backup quarterback, and he kind of rejuvenated the offense. They got a field goal right before halftime. And then in the second half, Notre Dame's offense looked much better running the football. Mike Denbrock is the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. He was at LSU last season, and it's impressive to see how well he's doing there. I mean, he had Jaden Daniels, obviously, last year, and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, and he doesn't have quite that talent offensively at Notre Dame, or he doesn't even have close to that kind of talent. But yet, here he's helped Notre Dame get to the national championship game, and those Notre Dame fans that are Brian Kelly haters, I guess is the only word I can come up with it, they're really laughing today because Brian Kelly came to LSU talking about he thought he could win a championship at LSU, didn't think he can do it at Notre Dame, but here you go. Marcus Freeman in his third season brings Notre Dame to the national championship game. And if Ohio State gets in there or even Texas, they'll be the more talented team, but it seems like this Notre Dame team's playing with a lot of heart.
All right, we'll take a break, come back, talk LSU basketball. Jeff Palermo, our guest, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, 621 traffic now, WWL. 625, a rainy Friday morning. Be careful out there. If you got any information about puddles of water, standing water, you can safely text us, 504-260-1870. I encountered some on the way in about an hour and a half ago, and it made the little traction thing go off in the car. So be aware of that and slow down. Jeff Palermo, our guest, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Jeff, got a story up at WWL.com about those Lady Tigers. Time to find out how good they really are. Tell me about it.
Well, they passed their first test last night. I'll have another story up there today recapping what was a thrilling game last night on Rocky Top as LSU prevailed over Tennessee 89-87 to get a game-winning shot with less than a second to go from Kaylin Gilbert, who that is her second game-winning shot she has made this year for LSU. Did one earlier this season against Washington over in the Bahamas. She ended up finishing with 22 points coming off the bench. Anisha Morrow was outstanding against Tennessee last night as well. 23 points, 21 rebounds. She's a big-time player for LSU, just kind of unassuming, but she continues to keep putting up big numbers after big numbers. Flauje Johnson had another great offensive game, 20 points for LSU. So they're now 18-0, Tommy, and they went up against a Tennessee team that's not easy to prepare for because they like to press you. They love to shoot a bunch of three-pointers, and they play a bunch of different players. They'll go out there and they'll play 10 players, and eight of them will get 15 minutes or more. So not an easy team to prepare for. Jewel Spear is their big offensive player, and Flauje, for the most part, held her in check. And the big key from last night's game was the fact that LSU really didn't turn it over against a pressing team. Only 14 turnovers, so not bad there. But a big win looming on the schedule here later on in the month is South Carolina, and that will be the big test, obviously. But a very good win for Coach Kim Mulkey's crew last night.
LSU ladies basketball against South Carolina is the equivalent to LSU football against Alabama. Accurate?
Yes, that is. It's the big rivalry, and Kim Mulkey's still trying to figure out a way to beat them. She's 0-3 against them so far. So, you know, they played them once during their national championship season, lost to them twice last year. South Carolina lost one of its best post players earlier this week to a torn ACL, so they've been weakened a little bit there. LSU's 18-0, but their strength of schedule, non-conference strength of schedule, is in the 200s. So it's been hard to gauge just how good they are. We know they're really good. We know that they're a national championship contending team. But we got to see them go up against some of the best teams in the country. And that was only the second time they've played a ranked team this year. So they get the win on the road. That's very impressive. And the schedule will be getting a little tougher here. As I mentioned, a big game, though, coming up is the South Carolina game. And you're right. It's like LSU-Alabama, and that'll be on January 23rd.
Tell me about the men's side.
Well, the men's side is they're on the struggle bus, Tommy. I mean,
the struggle bus.
The struggle bus. Yeah, you know, they had a nice. They played well during the non-conference portion of their schedule, but they have been exposed in league play. You know, they lost one of their better players on the season. They end up losing Jalen Reed, who was their one of their better players down low, a 6'10" forward. He goes down with a torn ACL. I think that happened in December. And they just have not been able to figure out a way to compensate for his loss. They're getting beat badly with rebounds. And then the other thing that they're really struggling with is turnovers, especially early on in the game. It cost them in their two losses to Vanderbilt, Missouri, and SEC play. And the Southeastern Conference is extremely tough, Tommy, and it's ungiving. So it's not like LSU, and these were Vandy and Mizzou are two teams that are not ranked. So that this was an opportunity for LSU to get off to a solid start. They've blown that opportunity, and now they'll be on the road Saturday at 23rd ranked Ole Miss.
Has Tre'Davious Green expressed any?
Oh, he is supposed to show up, and who knows? Maybe he can't help.
Seriously,
Matt, yeah,
I know he's got a good high school.
Yes, he's on the roster, and he said when he talked with the reporters right before the Texas Bowl, he said he'd take a week off, and then he'll join the team. So I would imagine if he's not practicing yet, it's any day now. But, man, that's tough to make that kind of transition that quick and make an impact and to expect him to make an impact in basketball.
Patrick Peterson played baseball and football, but he had a little bit of time between seasons, right?
Patrick Peterson, I don't think he played football. He didn't play baseball.
He didn't play baseball?
No, you know.
Who
no.
I'm thinking of?
Well,
Chad
James
Jones.
That's who I'm thinking of. Jameis Winston did it.
That's
Jameis
right.
Jameis Winston was a very good baseball player at Florida State.
I got my LSU players mixed up. Thank you, Jeff. A pleasure as always. Thanks for keeping me straight. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist. We got a big next half hour. We're going to talk with the Small Business Administration about disaster recovery and resilience. We'll also talk with Michael Williamson, CEO of the United Way of Southeast Louisiana, about victims of the terror attack, how to help them and their families. 6:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 6:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, a rainy Friday morning. A little bit warmer than it has been, though. 62 degrees, feels like 56 with a little bit of breeze that's going on, but a lot of rain. Be safe, be careful, slow down. And it's going to rain until about, they're saying, maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that. The worst of it should be before noon, and then it tapers off, disappears, and then cools off. The temperature drops to 48 by 5 o'clock. And the weekend is going to be cooler than it is today. Highs tomorrow of 50, partly cloudy, so it's going to feel cooler than that. And more rain on Sunday with highs of 59. Corey Williams joins us and Claudia Anderson, both public information officers for the Office of Disaster Recovery and Resilience with the Small Business Administration. Good morning, Corey. Good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Tommy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let me ask
Good
you,
morning, Tommy.
First of all, so I can direct traffic, can you all see each other? Do you know who's talking when or not?
Yes, we are actually right next to each other at our hotel.
So y'all jump in whenever you feel comfortable, answer the questions. Tell me, if you will, the whole idea behind the business recovery centers and who is eligible to apply for help and what kind of help is available.
Oh, thanks, Tommy. We appreciate it. So the business recovery centers, and we have two of them actually open and in place right now. One is actually at the Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street, and the other one is at the New Orleans Public Library, the main library at 219 Loyola Avenue. And they're there to actually provide one-on-one assistance to businesses so that they can apply for disaster loans in order to stem the burden that they've experienced as a result of this mass casualty incident.
Who would be eligible for one of these loans? People on Bourbon Street, or does it go beyond that?
That's a great question, Tommy. So anyone in Orleans Parish actually is eligible for the loans, whether they're businesses and nonprofits. And the one thing that we always emphasize, Tommy, is that it's very important to be very proactive in this process in identifying economic injury. Although the deadline is October 3rd, 2025, so many businesses will wait until May or June or July, and they'll be like, oh, well, Corey, we've had drops in sales since January, or we had to lay off an employee in March. Those are all signs, Tommy, of economic injury. And the quicker that businesses as well as nonprofits identify that, the better. Because the good thing is that it's a 12-month deferment on all of our loans, and it's a 12-month zero interest accrual. So many businesses and nonprofits can essentially use these federal funds as even what we call a stopgap fix, where if they use the funds for the course of a year, and let's say, you know, the business sustains itself and they're able to go ahead and pay off the loan, well, because no interest accrued and because there was a 12-month deferment, essentially there's no loan.
When it comes to the fact that it's only been, 9 days, I guess we are? Yeah, 9 days away from the event, you can't prove losses, right? You have to just, how do you substantiate or how do you become eligible for one of these loans?
Well, actually, we've spoken to many businesses. We've been boots on the ground going into businesses, and many of them actually have indicated they've sustained losses, and then they can project out because it's based on this year's numbers and last year's numbers. And if they've already encountered losses, we'd like them to apply to get into the system so that they're there. And then if they don't need the loan, they don't have to take it. There's no obligation and there's no cost to apply.
I got a text here that comes in and somebody's wondering again about the terms and repayment and forgiveness.
So great question, Tommy. With this program, there's no forgiveness of the loans. However, again, as I want to reiterate, that if someone would potentially want to use this as what we would call a stopgap fix, again, they can use the funds for the course of 12 months. And, you know, again, there's zero interest accrual or no interest accrual. There's also the 12-month deferment. So if they are in a position to repay the loan within the course of a year, again, there's that almost is the essential piece of a somewhat of a grant, but it does have to be repaid, those funds, you know, the initial loan amount. But the loan can be financed over 30 years. So, we always try to present a couple of different alternatives in case someone may not want that long-term debt and they have that option to actually finance it over the 30-year period.
Somebody text
me.
Go ahead.
If I might just add, nonprofits and businesses can seek up to $2 million, and the interest rates are as low as 4% for businesses and 3.625% for nonprofit organizations.
Wait, so how do we get from that 0% to?
Well, that's once that year is over.
Oh, once the year is over, I get
take,
you.
Yes, yeah. If you end up then having a loan amount past that year, you would then have that in low interest rate.
And my next question was, if for whatever reason, I don't know what secures the loan or if it's secured by anything, people are texting and they're concerned if they can't pay it back, would they lose their business? But I guess if you structured out over 30 years, it'd be kind of hard to not pay that back. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's amortized in order to try to keep those costs as low as possible and to make those repayment, monthly repayment
just options available for them.
So at what point, I mean, and again, just because somebody texted this in, they're concerned about losing their business. At what point, if they can't,
would the loan become secured?
Yeah.
At
what point would they ever be at risk of losing their business? Would their business have to secure the loan? Is, I guess, what they're asking.
That's a great question. So our processing center in Fort Worth, Texas, determines the collateral that's required for the loan. So businesses can borrow up to the $25,000, Tommy, without pledging any – businesses and nonprofits can borrow up to $25,000 without pledging any collateral at all. However, once they go above the $25,000 threshold, there may be a – you know, well, there will be, you know, security required. It may not be the real estate. Keep in mind that, our processing center may actually use machinery, inventory, equipment. They may not actually use the physical real estate. It just depends on what the business has at that time.
Is there a website where people can go to find out the basics before they head down to the centers? One on Palace at the Palace Cafe on Canal Street, the other main library on Loyola?
Yes, they can go to lending.sba.gov. Again, that's lending.sba.gov. But the one thing I would really encourage anyone, that while we have these awesome customer service representatives in town, it's always probably best to meet in person, just to, and have any of the questions answered, turn in supplemental documents. Just really make it easy in the application process. So I would highly encourage those to visit the Palace Cafe, 605 Canal Street, as well as the New Orleans Public Library off of Loyola.
All right, thanks a lot. Valuable information. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Michael Williamson, CEO of United Way of Southeast Louisiana, about how you can donate to the United Way's fund. 652 Traffic Now, WWL. All right, 6:55, 5 till 7, our friend Tommy Tucker, WWO, Michael Williamson, our friend, CEO of United Way of Southeast Louisiana, joins us to talk about how you can donate to the United Way's Fund for Victims of the Bourbon Street Terror Attack. How you doing, Michael?
I'm good. Tommy, how are you doing this morning?
I'm okay, sir. Thanks for taking the time with us. I haven't spoken to you, so I'll tell you Happy New Year. I wish the new year could have started on a better way than it did with the attack on Bourbon Street. Tell me what the response has been like so far and what people can do to help.
Yeah, Tommy, let me start by saying, you know, hearts, thoughts, prayers go out to the 14 families of the deceased victims and the more than 40 that were injured and hospitalized. The response has been overwhelming. Gail Benson's significant contribution to our efforts along with the Saints and the NFL Foundation, you know, was huge. But just individuals from across the world that have been making big and small gifts to ensure that we can get the victims the help they need. It's been amazing.
Tell me how people can donate and what the money is going to be used for, Michael, if you will, please.
Sure. I appreciate you asking. So folks can go to United Way, SELA.org. It's right there on the homepage. It's United for NOLA, United for New Orleans Relief Fund. Right there, you can click to donate. But you can also see a timeline of all of our activities since January 1st and an accounting of how much money we've raised and how much we've actually put out the door. So United Way, SELA.org. It's all right there. Folks can contribute easily. And also, if folks need resources, we have a resource page there, so folks know where to go for resources. And the funds have been used already to provide direct financial assistance to impacted victims, and also supporting our partners in providing mental health counseling.
Michael, in general, talk about the need for help and how, generally speaking, in addition to helping the Bourbon Street attack victims and their families, how people, why they should help the United Way, I guess what I'm trying to ask you.
Well, it shows up in the comments that people are making when they make gifts, so they follow our posts on social media. You know, folks, you know, our donors feel like the last thing that a family should have to worry about is how they get food or how they get transportation to get to their loved one who may be in the hospital or come to get their remains, unfortunately. So, folks, you know, our donors really want to make sure that those worries are taken out of the way so folks can focus on their family and their recovery, because we know it's going to be long, and we just don't think that the financial burden of a funeral or food or transportation or medical expenses should be a burden to these families at this time.
Tell me again, Michael, before we wrap it up, how people can donate.
Sure. Go to United Way, SELA.org. It's right there on the front page. You can click to donate and also find out more about resources that are available to families that are impacted.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate your time and your efforts. Michael Williamson, CEO of United Way of Southeast Louisiana. So to recap, if you want to find out more about SBA loans, you can go to lending.sba.gov is what they told me, lending.sba.gov, or you can go to one of the two centers that have been set up, one at the Palace Cafe on Canal Street, the other at the main library on Loyola. If you want to donate to the United Way, you can do it at unitedwaycela.org. And we all know New Orleans is a caring community, and we always have each other's backs. And the victims of the Bourbon Street terror attack and their families need our help. The Greater New Orleans Foundation made it easy with the New Orleans New Year's Day Tragedy Fund. You can donate now to that by going to gnof.org, or you can go to neworleanssaints.com and purchase the NOLA Love T-shirt. And I'll be buying them for the staff because I want to make a donation and I think it's a spiffy-looking shirt. Or you can go to Pelicans.com and purchase the Pels version of the NOLA Love T-shirt. And those proceeds benefit United Way's United for New Orleans Relief Fund. So you can go to GNOF.org, make a donation, or you can go to NewOrleansSaints.com, get your NOLA Love Saints T-shirt, or go to Pelicans.com, get your Pels version of the NOLA Love T-shirt, or go to UnitedWaySela.org. When we come back, we'll talk to Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, get the latest from him about the council hearings on the attack and barriers and bollards and more. And then we'll help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union.